This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Around the country, including here in Wisconsin, yesterday, thousands of students walked out of school to demand action on gun control. The organized walkout comes after the latest high-profile school shooting, which resulted in 17 deaths at a high school in Parkland, Florida.
We've spoken with Devorah Heitner on this show before about her work with kids and tech. But Heitner herself is a survivor of a school shooting, and she recently wrote about her experience for Time magazine. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.
What have you observed so far as you've been watching really what's been going on at your kids' school, at other schools in the Chicago area especially?
Well, a lot of the elementary schools here in Evanston, Illinois, I believe all of them, the kids did a 17-minute observance. They were outside, and at my son's school, they did a peace circle, which I thought was a very appropriate way to deal with the range of information that kids in a K-5 school would have about the reasons that for the school walkout, which is that, you know, where people are trying to think about policies to make school shootings and mass shootings less likely. But, you know, for a kindergartner or first grader who maybe has been shielded from at least some of the news about gun violence, a peace circle, I think, is a very appropriate way for an elementary school to observe that this is happening, give students a chance to participate, give older students a chance to speak out. So some of the signs that older kids were carrying in our community did refer to gun violence, to protecting kids more than guns, other statements like that, yet still gave younger kids a chance to be responsive at a developmentally appropriate level. So I thought that was really nice. In the middle schools and high schools here, kids did do a 17-minute walkout with the support of school administrations. And the high school students were actually calling their reps on issues related to gun control. And we, unfortunately, our governor yesterday vetoed one of the gun control measures that was up for consideration in Illinois. So they were calling him, they were calling other people. So they really took that time to do direct political action. And then they went back to class. So I heard from teachers at the school that it was a very successful action, and that any disparaging comments about, oh, kids just want to miss school, were completely misplaced, that the students really used the time in a very focused way and then, you know, returned to school to continue their day.
This is an issue that is very near to you as a survivor of a school shooting. Can you talk a little bit about what your experience was like? It happened at a time that I think now, especially with the current dialogue, we don't tend to think about having a lot of school shootings before the 2000s.
Absolutely. So we're in a really different moment then. So I survived a school shooting in 1992. I was a student at Simon's Rock College, which was a college for kids who wanted to leave high school early for whatever reason, whether some of my classmates were kids from small towns who had run out of classes to take at small high schools, and others of us had various social and emotional issues in high school, or we were just bored. But it was a school full of kids who all identified as being a little different, I would say. So when this happened, we felt like Simon's Rock was a refuge. It was a place where we had found a community of people like us. Many of us were academically challenged for the first time. We were super excited to be there. It was also a little bit of an isolated place, so it felt a little bit like a haven. I was coming from a more urban community, and so living in Western Massachusetts felt very safe, very idyllic. And all of a sudden, a student that I didn't know very well, I'm not sure I would have even recognized him on site, even in our small campus, he had been apparently planning this for some time. And when he turned 18, he went and bought a semi-automatic weapon at a local sporting goods store, smuggled it onto campus that evening in a guitar case, and very methodically, you know, planned to kill everyone on campus. And he had ordered his bullets through the mail, and they'd been apprehended. And this is so horrible to remember, because this is how this all could have been prevented. An administrator had reported that the student had received bullets in the mail, and they still gave them to him because he apparently told an administrator he was taking them home to go hunting over winter break with his family. He was able to buy the gun because he was 18, that even though in Massachusetts he wouldn't have been able to purchase a gun, his home state was Montana. And at that time, there was a loophole in the laws in Massachusetts that your ability to purchase a gun was determined by your eligibility in your home state. The student had a gun. He started a shooting rampage on campus, and he murdered a professor in his car, Nakanyan Saez, and he murdered a student, Galen Gibson, and shot several other students and also a security guard who was actually, I think, the first person that he wounded and grievously. She's 25 years later still dealing with very serious injuries from that night, and was pretty clearly was planning on killing everyone else as well. But his gun jammed, and then he ended up turning himself in, and potentially in frustration. We don't really know, but he stopped the rampage because of this technical problem with the gun, which is why the rest of us are here to tell the story. And it was such a bizarre experience. I was studying with my friends in one of my friends' bedrooms. This was finals week. It was December, the very end of the semester. And we were hanging out in his room, all writing papers and finishing work. And we got a call to get away from the windows and lock the door on the on-campus apartment, and that someone had a gun and was going around killing everyone. And there was a moment where we all thought it was a joke, but it was very clear that it was serious. And we heard sounds, including gunshots, that made us realize how serious it was. And then much, much later, we heard police. And what seemed like hours and hours later, but was, I think, about an hour later, we got a call saying that it was safe and that the student had been taken into custody. And I later learned the police were afraid to come onto campus because they didn't know how many assailants there were, and they weren't heavily armed. I mean, it was just such an insane situation. And we sat there in my friend Stefan's bedroom, you know, thinking that we were all going to die. It was very bizarre. I remember feeling really angry. I remember feeling really distressed that I hadn't accomplished very much yet in my life because I was 17. So I definitely was feeling very much like there was nothing I could do. There was no sense of, oh, well, I'm sure everything's going to be okay. I think we all felt fairly grim. And afterwards, there was a lot of numbness. And then when we found out that we had lost Nakanyan Saez and Galen Gibson, we were all devastated. Many of my friends were close with Professor Saez. I was close with Galen Gibson. He was someone who was friends with almost everyone. And I think a lot of people who were at Simon's Rock at that time, or certainly who knew Galen from his hometown in Gloucester, Mass, felt that way. He was a really beloved, wonderful person. And we were also stunned also that a fellow student would do this. It just seemed very unreal. And people who knew the murderer later said that they were less surprised that he had spoken about violence. But for me, who had no exposure to this other kid, it was just stunning that someone would do this. And I remember feeling very angry and thinking, if you hate the world that much, you know, you can end your own life, right? And not that I think suicide is no big deal, but it seems so much more ethical. I thought, well, if you hate the world, but why take other people with you? Why, you know, why kill people who do want to live and do want to be in the world? That was my 17-year-old response. But later, when I learned how easy it had been for the killer to get a gun, I was really enraged. And I hadn't thought that much about gun control, you know, before this happened in 1992. People who had guns seemed like a whole other world away from me. I didn't grow up in a hunting culture or in a street violence culture. I wasn't really around guns at all, except maybe at summer camp where we had, I think, riflery practice. And so it just seemed very bizarre to me that anyone would want a gun, or that it would be okay for an angry 18-year-old to just wake up one morning and go and buy one in a sporting goods store. That just seemed completely bizarre.
You know, this was the early 90s. What has it been like since then? Because there have been so many school shootings since that moment. When you see the news reels, when you see the new update about yet another school shooting, what goes through your mind?
Well, I'm very aware. I was also a professor for many years, and I'm very aware of the tensions on college campuses. I'm friends with some people who teach at Virginia Tech. So certainly when that happened, I was very aware of how unsafe all of us can be, you know, in a campus environment where people are just there to learn and to teach and to do their work. And no one's expecting someone to do this. And also the limits of, even if you know, in the Virginia Tech case, in some ways was very similar, where it was a student who was at the school, who was very angry, who had expressed an interest in violence in his writing. People knew that there were issues with this young man, but it wasn't really clear, you know, how to respond, how to keep the community safe. And we also know that sometimes people express really troubling ideas and don't commit violence. So it's really tricky. I mean, as a professor, as someone who's taught students who sometimes can be going through a hard time emotionally, it's really hard to know, at what point do I not feel safe meeting with a student for office hours? At what point do I feel like I need to call in for backup? At what point do I say that the student is, you know, shouldn't be on campus, right? These are very difficult questions. And so I think Virginia Tech really hit home for me. And then hearing about the survivors at Umpqua Community College, certainly when Columbine happened, I was still a relatively young person. I mean, all of these affected me. But I think it was after I became a parent, and then the murders in Newtown at Sandy Hook School, I think at that point I was, you know, just on the floor, like really, truly so devastated and distressed that this was still happening. It, Sandy Hook happened on the 20-year anniversary of the Simon's Rock shootings. And, you know, Galen Gibson's father, Gregory Gibson, who has written a lot about this and been an incredible activist for gun control, wrote that he and his wife were on their way to visit Galen's grave when they heard about Newtown, which is not so far from them because they're also in New England. And I just, he felt this sense of, you know, complete frustration. Like, how is this still happening? And I share that sense of just bewilderment that we are allowing anyone essentially who wants a gun, no matter how little reason they have, no matter how unstable they are, no matter what their proximity is to innocent people whose lives should also matter, right? They can get a gun. And this, so I think as a parent, Sandy Hook really petrified me. And my son was at a pre-K to 8 school, and they were going to do a response to Newtown and send cards and blankets to the children and the families who survived. And I was going to keep my kid home from school because he was 3 years old. And I just thought, how could we possibly talk to a 3 or 4 year old about this? There's no way I want my little child to know that a bad person came into an elementary school and murdered children. And so I just felt like there's no way to message this that was appropriate at all. I couldn't think of one. So I was going to keep him home, but I did find out that the, you know, the preschool classes weren't going to engage with this assembly, you know, which was beautiful. And I thought, of course, older kids who knew about this, who were feeling helpless, should find positive ways to reach out. But honestly, it's pretty hard to find a positive message in a situation like what happened in Newtown, Connecticut, or Parkland, Florida, or at Simon's Rock, or Columbine, right? And so, I mean, I think we struggle. Of course, we want kids to have hope, but it's hard to feel hopeful about this. I think the biggest hope for me is that we make it impossible for people to get these weapons.
You wrote a piece for Time where you talked about this cultural conversation that we're having right now. What do you think makes this moment different from what happened after Newtown, from what happened after Columbine?
Yeah, it's hard to say because, you know, parents from Newtown did rise up and go to Washington. And if you look at the record, there's Moms Demand Gun Sense and all of these other groups have been very active. So I don't think anything that about what's going on now should lead people who've been fighting this fight for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years to feel like they haven't been doing their work, because I think a lot of us have been active, you know, working on gun control. But I think these students, just somehow the fact that they are standing up, and also some of the parents from Parkland, the fact that they're standing up to demand change so quickly after what happened, while the news cameras are still rolling, while they are still in the spotlight, I think the fact that these young people are so privileged, and so many privileged parents and educators around the country can see their own children reflected in these kids, which may be a little bit different than the young people of Ferguson and other young people who have also been speaking out about the violence that their communities experience. I think these kids also just were really skilled at social media, kind of like right message, right time. It's really hard to say what creates a tipping point for people. I thought Las Vegas, the mass shooting in Las Vegas, which, you know, was so horrific and so terrifying and so completely inexplicable in so many ways, would be a tipping point for people. But, you know, maybe this is the straw. I certainly think that these young people are commendable, and they've really taken this incredibly traumatic moment in their own lives, something that no child should have to live through. You know, it's hard to say why this and not previous horrific events, but I think each one actually does bring more and more people to the table, and maybe this is the one that's going to finally affect change. And we're seeing, you know, if some legal changes already, but also these retailers making some changes, which of course is tremendously important as well.
Yeah. Well, Devorah, thank you so much for sharing your story with me, and thank you for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Devorah Heitner is an expert on kids and digital technology. She's also the survivor of a school shooting that took place while she was in college. She spoke with Joy Powers, and you can find a link to her recent essay for Time magazine at WUWM.com.